Welcome back to the second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only.
Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with your host, Pete Talbot, along with Dr. Samara Humat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you an opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here's your host of Leading Edge Medicine, Pete Talbot.
Hey, welcome back. And we were right in the middle of the story, but if you just tuned in, this is Leading Edge Medicine, as you just heard. And today, at least for the next and the final hour here on KTTH, we have the one and only, the world famous, the renowned Pete Talbot. No, I meant Dr. Ruben Lane. Gotcha. Dr. Ruben Maiden. And, I've considered putting you in my will. She's almost in my will. Well, all three of you. My goodness. My life.
Almost, you know. Just
my
almost.
Life. Think of my life without the three of you. Okay. I'm on the table because she was smart enough to have me do if you hadn't heard the story, the calcium scoring. I was off the charts. I get on the table. My left descending artery, I think, like
left
that,
anterior descending artery,
collapsed or something. What I was telling you is I was super loopy, but I knew things were fine. I had told the doctors and the nurses, that's okay. No matter what happens, I know where I'm going. I was at peace. I was happy. But about 10 minutes in, all of a sudden, you were saying, I need this, I need that. And then all of a sudden you said, I need a 301B or something, and I need it now. And the whole, you know, things changed in that room.
There's something about hearing your surgeon say, oh, my God.
No, he didn't say that.
No, there are words and phrases.
Or swear words, yes.
There are words and phrases we're always trained not to say. Yes. Ever. Like, oops.
Oops.
We never say oops, no matter what.
You know what? I actually heard that one time in the Army, because when I got shot up, they had multiple procedures trying to put some stuff back together, and a lot of it was done under regional, and they were working on my right hand and wrist, and it was an axillary block, so I couldn't feel my arm, but I was wide awake because they were working, and I was laying there about half dozing off, and all of a sudden I heard the surgeon say, oops. I turned around and said, wait a minute, Doc. What was that oops? He said, oh, don't worry about it, son. You got another one.
Well, we only have one heart. You know.
I know. Yeah. So anyway.
He was just spoofing me.
So I'm on the table, and all of a sudden I could tell the overall feel in the operating room was different.
Yes.
And a 20-minute procedure turned into 2 hours and 45 minutes. Yeah. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, I do.
It's been almost
That's
years.
A hard one to forget. Yes.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah. Good. And I came out of there with 7 stents. And I remember in the recovery room, and because you wanted me to stay a night or two, I remember nurses and doctors were coming in, and they would just say, I just wanted to see the guy with 7 stents, because they'd never heard of that before. I don't know if it's a record or not, but it's not normal, apparently.
No, it's not normal.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you do remember a lot of what happened, because part of what happens is that when the heart becomes unstable, the blood pressure drops. And we're working with someone in shock. You are in a shocky state.
Mm.
And the sedation also reduces blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of times we have to withhold giving any more sedation just so a person's blood pressure doesn't fall further. And so we don't suppress their breathing. And so and sometimes it's, in say, for example, in heart attacks, it's just the pain that people are under that is keeping their pressure high enough to keep them from dying in shock. And a lot of times we can't even fully treat the pain, you know, because we need the adrenaline. And so you were in one of those states where we just couldn't further sedate you. So you got to
experience. Heard it all.
You got to enjoy the experience with us.
You kept asking for things. What is he doing? You know, he kept asking for another and another. And so, so seven isn't maybe a record, but it is not normal.
It's not normal. It's a very high number. And I think more importantly, it was the instability of your vessels.
Now that I've got you here,
yeah,
I want you to back me up on something I have told Pete several times.
Okay. Here it comes.
Yes.
Those seven stents, they're holding open seven little spots in the arterial tree in his heart. And each one is what? Maybe a centimeter in length or so. And the rest of the vessels are still old and in crummy shape, Pete. And what you need to do is assume that he hasn't fixed your heart.
Yeah.
He's propped open seven little spots, and the rest of it can still go to hell. And you need to have an ideal lifestyle and diet. I want you lean and firm and fit.
Yes.
Am I right?
That's right. And I think that this is a misconception a lot of people have about stents and bypass. They think, well, that just fixed it. Well, fix an it. It fixed specific blockages that were high risk, that may have been leading into a very upcoming heart attack or limiting their heart's blood flow. But the process that caused the blockage, we call that atherosclerosis. It's a buildup of cholesterol in the vessels. There's nothing about putting a stent in the heart or putting a bypass in the heart that's going to fix the internal metabolic process of atherosclerosis. That's where people have to do all the hard work.
That's right.
Right? The stent is the easy part, you know, except in you. But the stent's the easy part. And then, you know, the other hard work that you guys assist people in is really important. And it isn't just cholesterol, you know. There's been a debate for years and years. I would talk to naturopathic doctors and they'd say cholesterol doesn't matter. It's your inflammation, right? And then I would talk to physicians and allopaths such as myself and they'd be saying, well, cholesterol's the whole story. And, you know, of course your other things, blood pressure and diabetes, et cetera. But it turns out that cholesterol and inflammation are both super important. And controlling inflammation is a complex process. Yep. And the people who achieve that have a lot better outcome with their hearts in the long run. And so, yes, a stent takes care of an immediate problem, Jerry, but it doesn't fix the underlying atherosclerotic process. And it's not just occurring in the heart. It's occurring in the aorta. It's occurring in the brain. It's occurring in the kidneys, the legs, et cetera.
And that's why, really, when you get men in their 50s and 60s that are developing less robust erectile function, that's a worrisome sign because blood supply in your nether regions is related to blood supply in your heart, which is also related to blood supply in your kidneys, which is related to the blood supply in your brain.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So literally what you're saying is that men in their 50s or at any age, if they're experiencing
and it's not full ED, they may be able to have erections. They're just not of the quality they used to be. The flow has diminished.
I see.
Okay. So it's a decline in erectile function, not in total ED. But anything that shows me that your blood supply is decreasing in one part of your body tells me it's most likely decreasing everywhere.
Agreed.
And that's where we need to work because it's one body with one arterial tree.
Mm-hmm. So we have to watch for all Dr. Mixon, you don't do this, Dr. Umat, and I appreciate this, but Dr. Mixon scowls and gets very ornery. And
I like you and don't want you to die.
That's right. And I love you too. He loves me. No, he doesn't just like me. He loves me and I love him. I've lost about 30 pounds since that experience, but the embarrassing
I was going to say, looking at you from across the table here, you are in some of the best shape I've seen you. So congratulations.
Well, no, but he knows.
There's more to go.
Should I lift my shirt? No. I have another 25, 30 pounds. Technically, I could lose. and it's difficult.
What's this modifier technically?
Well, I could right. See, he's just not very nice.
You need to lose it.
Okay. So, in any event, I'm so grateful for these three people here. And like you were, all of you were just explaining, it's not just that area in the heart where my stents are. It's a whole body thing.
Yes.
Really, you know, we're here talking about cardiology, but really this is kind of longevity stuff. It was because of longevity and the sophisticated lab work and things that we do at longevity that ultimately saved my life. I guess you're the first in line in my will. And then, well, now maybe you. This is great. Hey, let's take some calls, shall we? Let's go to Seattle and talk to Mike. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you for taking my call. My question is about the blood test enzyme LDH, lactate dehydrogenase enzyme.
And it
got high up in like 270s. So I had to test for LDH1 through LDH5. And the LDH1 was the highest one, you know, out of whack, which I guess is related to heart muscle and red blood cells. So I'm concerned about if there's something. And by the way, it's come down. The total LDH has come down since then to 213. But about 15 years ago, I had an electron beam tomography test of my heart, even though I had, okay, all kinds of stuff, but my MD, you know, suggested I might consider having it, and it came out really high, a score over 500. And, you know, I read up on stuff and took, I'm still taking two life extension vitamin K2 capsules a day and, you know, try to do something to make it better. And I had electron beam tomography test about 3 years after that, and it came down to about 450. So my question is, is there something I should be doing, test-wise or otherwise?
Well, sure. So first of all, are you having any symptoms? How do you feel?
Okay.
When I
hike uphill and don't have shortness of breath, and you know, I've been doing construction on my house, but I'm an old guy. I'm 82, weight 160, 6'1", BMI, you know, okay. Based on the in-body 570 test.
Right, and then how are
oxidized
you doing?
Oxidized LDL is low.
Mm-hmm. Is your total LDL low?
No.
Okay.
It's crept up, which is...
crept up
you
to
know,
what?
I don't have my test in front of me, but I don't...
But we know it's high.
I actually get the LabCorp... CBC, you know, blood count test about once a quarter. And so I track all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, not all this stuff, but a lot of parameters. And I noticed
the
LDL.
Go ahead.
And because I had measured my oxidized LDL, I had heard that it's the oxidized LDL that one needs to be concerned about. And I take, I think 16 milligrams of astaxanthin a day.
Atorvastatin.
Which I think is a... Pardon?
Maybe atorvastatin.
No, I
don't take any statin.
Maybe okay. Astaxanthin.
I'm not on any prescription drug in that ballpark.
Right. Yeah. So in terms of your heart, you know, just in terms of general guidelines, when and that EBT, that is a calcium score. That's what Pete was talking about. That when that score is above 400, we'd like to evaluate the heart. With a stress test, at about 400, a person runs about a 5% chance of having a severe blockage, at a minimum. And so that's kind of getting in the range, 1 out of 20 people, where it starts making sense to run stress tests and make sure that the heart looks fine. And then secondly, that elevated score means that you are laying plaque down in your arteries. The challenge is first determining is there any amount of plaque that's severe and potentially might lead to a problem with closure, heart attack, et cetera. And the stress test really helps stratify that. And then secondly, to do all the factors to prevent further atherosclerosis from depositing in the arteries. And all those factors, of course, span from lifestyle to supplements and sometimes to medications. And it's not any single one thing. A lot of people will say, oh, my oxidized LDL is low, therefore I don't need to be worried about my total LDL, or my HDL is high, mm-hmm. therefore I don't need to be worried about my sure. LDL cholesterol. And those assumptions are just actually not true. Mm. We have to not worry, but we have to address every one of them. Why not have every factor optimized instead of just some of them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, more is better in this case. You know, the more things we can address, the less chance that you're going to be laying down plaque. Because you're right, total LDL is not the be-all and end-all. But the more LDL cholesterol you've got, mm-hmm. the more LDL cholesterol you have available to be damaged and get phagocytized and get laid down as plaque. So lowering your total LDL and lowering the oxidation potential and the free radicals and all the inflammatory changes that damage that LDL and cause it to be perceived as an inflammatory invader by your body, because that's why your body then engulfs it with and phagocytizes it and lays it down, moves it to the side of the wall and lays it down on the wall to get it out of the bloodstream. Okay, this is a dangerous process, but it's a process in which your body is trying to compensate and get this inflammation out of the way by putting it underneath the endothelium, where it's not directly in contact with the blood anymore. Sooner or later, though, you lay enough of that stuff down, it can rupture through the endothelial wall, and now you got a big pussy plaque that forms in the middle of a vessel and clots off and shuts down the blood supply, and that's when you have your heart attack.
And one more thing to say about that LDH that you were talking about, it's pretty rare that unless someone's having acute cardiac injury, that the LDH is elevated. It's just not one of those things that goes up very often. It's more likely from the red cells with an LDH1 than from the heart itself. So I think it's probably unrelated.
And with that, we got to go to a break. We've got questions coming up, Cheryl, Don, Mark, about aortic stenosis, tachycardia, collapsed artery. Lots of questions. This is going to be good. I've got Dr. Reuben Maiden, our cardiologist, in the studio for the next 40 minutes until the end of the show. We have one line open at 800-465-8770.
You hear all the time about fitness and doing exercise. Where do you get the energy to start your exercise program? With Longevity, I was able to start my exercise program, and that parlayed into more energy, of which I ended up going from 220 pounds to about 180 pounds in about 2 years. And that has changed my life. And that's why I tell everyone I know about Longevity.
Really, 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 are you really mine? Really, 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 are you really mine?
You tell me that you love me, and you tell me that you want me, and you even wear my graduation ring.
Ooh-ah.
It's too wonderful.
Ooh-ah.
It's so beautiful.
Oh, you wanted to sing.
I was almost wanting to join
Jimmy Rogers.
I did, but I think it's probably better for everybody listening that I don't.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Pete Talbot.
No one in this room is wearing my graduation ring.
No. In the studio with me, normally, Dr. Jerry Mixon, the founder, chief medical officer of Longevity Medical Clinics, and also Dr. Samira Umat, the assistant medical director. And today we've got Dr. Reuben Maiden. And we were talking about my weight issues and my heart issues and things and how grateful I am. I was just going to say, I have never thought of you as being overweight, ever, ever, ever. But have you lost weight? You look more trim, actually, than I've ever seen you. Or is that just my imagination?
No, it's an optical illusion.
Is it?
No, I am. You know, health is a journey.
Yes.
People think they're going to get to a point where all of a sudden they're done.
Yeah.
Right? I think that in life, with all those things, we think we're going to finally get there to where it's done. It's never done. Right, it's this process that goes on.
It is an ongoing process, day in, day out.
As you get older, you often have to ramp up the effort.
And I have been in fortunately really good health in many ways, and I've paid a lot of attention to my health. But there were lots of places for me to improve, and you guys know, you know, my wife Christine James, naturopathic doctor, and she's very, very concerned about how we live, how we eat, and she's helped improve my health and get me even more optimal in my weight. And I'm actually grateful to you guys too, because, you know, like everyone, I don't know what my really detailed blood work shows unless I do it. I don't know where I may have vitamin deficiencies or abnormalities in metabolism, and I've been grateful to be myself a patient at Longevity, and have found my health is even optimized more, including, you know, inflammation markers, thyroid markers, hormones, all those things that adds another level of health. So right now I'm blessed and graced with a good team of people to help me out. And I take this moment to thank you guys. You know, you asked, how did I get to know you guys? Jerry and I probably crossed paths 20 years ago, mm-hmm. I would guess. And I'd seen a patient who he had seen, and I thought, who, you know, what is he doing with you? And this is like really amazing, intense metabolic medicine. What is going on here? And then I called you and we talked, and there are a couple models for disease, right? And one model is that we have a disease in an organ, we have a blockage mm-hmm. in an artery, we put in a stent, right? But there's another model for disease and health where really when you think about it, every cell has a nucleus, every cell has a membrane, every cell has mitochondria, which creates the energy for our bodies. And there can be a disorder, say of the mitochondria not getting enough energy, that will affect every cell of the body. It's not an organ problem. It's not, we call that the function of the cell or functional medicine, right? And so Jerry started very early on the curve, looking at how can we improve the function of every cell in the body, not just, say, improve kidney function, mm-hmm. right? And he developed this entire system of looking at functional medicine. And Samira, you're boarded in that, an expert in functional medicine. And so I was just enthralled that someone had an interest that I did. I also had same interest back then, and it wasn't that common. And now it is, of course, incredibly important in our health. So here I am after all these years and feel like my health has benefited from these endeavors also.
Well, the very fact that...
We're glad to be able to help you, too.
That's right. We are honored that you are such a happy patient. And with that in mind, I'm going to take about 30 seconds to remind you folks, if this isn't evidence, that you ought to consider making a free health analysis appointment. I mean, I don't know what is. This is the time. There has never been a better time for you to get serious about your health. And that's why we do the free health analysis appointments through October 23rd, I think it is. I don't have it right here. Anyway, October 23rd. I believe we have at least 15, 16, or 17 appointments available, the free ones, the free health analysis appointments in each of our three clinics, Tacoma, Linwood, Kirkland. So, yes, we are giving you the two free tests, the blood test and the free in-body test, but we're also giving you just as a little extra incentive. Quite frankly, I don't think you need it. You know, I don't think they need that. Well, okay, the extra incentive, but we're doing it. You can have your choice of either $100 of free longevity supplements. They're excellent because he created them. This guy right here. Or you can get the,
You can't see his finger.
They
he does that a lot.
Well, that's what they know. I wasn't pointing that janitor just walked down the hall. He didn't create them. Anyway, or the two free fitness books along with the fitness bands. So your choice, $100 of supplements or the two fitness books and the fitness bands. Your choice. Just for coming and take that baby step. Really, really, you need a Dr. Samira Umat. Not that she can be, she might be, but you need a longevity doctor to take a look at your health. I'm serious. It's free. Go to lmclinic.com. Push the schedule now button and make an appointment. For goodness sakes, we've got them on a first come, first serve basis at lmclinic.com. You were just saying during the break that you did 19 heart procedures, surgeries, or whatever you call them this last week. That's not normal, is it?
No, that's not normal. It would normally be, for me, probably 4 or 5 per week.
So how come, why 19?
This is what we talked about earlier, the stress of the world, the way COVID is affecting our health, the way it affects the heart is playing a role as well. So I think that a lot of the medical system is under a high level of stress that isn't necessarily perceived in the rest of the world. And the way that the medical systems in our area have adapted is amazing, because there's a lot of additional processes. For example, for disinfecting to keep people safe, in people, and I make a plea to people, if you're having problems, if you have a concern about your heart, you think you're having symptoms, you know, this is not the time to delay. We really have figured it out. The transmission of disease inside the medical system is at an incredible minimal, you know, probably safer coming in my clinic than just walking in a random drugstore, right? Mm-hmm. And so so just keep that in mind. We're not in February or March,
yeah.
You know, right?
That's right.
We know a lot more.
Yeah. And so... so don't wait till the last moment. Like, this is a lot of what I'm seeing where I work.
Yeah.
And this is a good time for me to make my my official disclaimer. My opinions today are those of my own, not of my healthcare system. I always have to say that whenever I speak publicly. And as you know, I have some unique opinions. And so,
well, I was told that when I was on first became an official patient of yours, I think there was 13 doctors at cardiologists at Evergreen, I guess. And they said that you sort of stood alone in certain aspects because you considered alternative approaches along with standard approaches, but sort of a mix or a hybrid, and that you're unique. Would you agree with that description?
I appreciate the description. Yes. So I integrate medicine. I do standard cardiology, invasive procedures, interventional stenting. I brought stenting to my group in 85, or angioplasty and subsequently stenting. And so I do all that conventional, but I also believe in functional medicine and the things that there were theory years ago, for example, inflammation, are now fact.
That's right.
Right? It's become fact. You wouldn't talk to a cardiologist nowadays that would say inflammation is unimportant.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Whereas even 10 years ago, you know, it was controversial. I remember when the Jupiter trial came out and showed that lowering cholesterol in people with inflammatory factors, even when they had normal cholesterols, prevented cardiac events like heart attacks. Mm-hmm. Not even a high cholesterol, just inflammation, lowering the cholesterol, because inflammation causes the cholesterol deposit in the arteries. So you can kind of, if you can't treat the inflammation, then treat the cholesterol. Well, it occurs to me, why not treat both?
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
And so I believe in integrative medicine, and I'm very scientific and science-based. I do things where I have great studies to support the idea. And there's a lot of things that in theory may work, and I'm not opposed to those. It's just not particularly what I do. I do pretty much science, outcome-based medicine, and a lot of that now is integrative, mm-hmm. You know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wonderful, wonderful. Let's go to Renton and talk with Cheryl. Cheryl, welcome.
Thank you.
Cheryl.
There you go.
I am 61. I am morbidly obese. About 2 to 3 years ago, I was diagnosed with aortic stenosis, and it was moderate, and now it has progressed to severe. And so I'm supposed to be meeting with my cardiologist on Monday to for her recommendations. And so I was calling just to find out what your ideas would be about treatment and whatever.
Sure. So again, always starting with a person. How do you feel? How are you doing?
Well, basically, I don't seem to have a lot of the, I haven't had any chest pain, and the only thing that I could think, maybe I'm not taking any blood pressure medication, but it fluctuates somewhat, and I found that taking magnesium helps my blood pressure to stay lower. And
how is your breathing capacity?
Well, if I'm just sedentary, it's fine. Because I do have mobility issues, it's not like I can really get up and really get my heart rate really up, so it's hard to tell as far as
how do you feel if you walk across a room? Yeah, how do you feel if you walk across a room?
I believe I feel fine.
What about going up a flight of stairs?
I'm not really able to test. I really haven't gone up a lot of stairs. I do know, though, that if I'm, like, sitting, I could be cold or whatever while I'm sitting. If I get up and I am moving around, and like I said, I have mobility issues. I have to use 2 quad canes to get around my house. So I'm not moving very fast. I will start sweating profusely.
Got
and
it.
I'm wondering
is that
if
something,
that's probably...
Is that something new? Is that something new or recent?
In the last couple of years, probably.
Mm-hmm.
More so in the last couple of years.
Right. So the reason I'm
so
asking this question is...
I thought maybe it was hormonal.
I might have been...
Right,
wrong,
so...
But now I don't.
So the reason I'm asking the questions is that aortic stenosis is narrowing of one of the heart valves. It's the valve that allows blood to leave the pumping heart chamber and then go to the body. The valve opens, lets blood flow into the aorta. That blood can then go everywhere. It can go up into the brain. It can go down into the limbs, and it goes to your entire body. And so when the valve doesn't open, your body's not getting enough blood flow. And it can also, when the blood can't get out of the heart chamber very easily out to the body because the valve is narrowed, kind of like a dam, the blood can back up in the lungs and cause shortness of breath or congestive symptoms like swelling, edema. And the problem with aortic stenosis is that it's a serious disease and it can be lethal, right? It can do that. It can kill people. And on the other hand, fixing the valve always carries risks. Even though we've historically done surgery for it, and there are non-surgical ways of putting valves into the heart for the aorta, they're called TAVR, that even with the non-surgical valves, there are risks. I mean, if it were free, risk-free, and we could fix everyone's valves, we would fix them no matter, as soon as they started getting moderately, severely narrowed, we would just do everyone. But we have to balance the risk of doing a procedure versus the benefit. And in aortic stenosis, we realize that the real benefit comes when people start getting symptoms from their valve. And before the symptoms, it's a lot less common that we would replace or TAVR the valve until symptoms. But in you, we don't really know. We can't tell whether you have symptoms or not. So we have to use our best guess. And then again, it's a complicated question because there are different types of aortic valve problems that cause aortic stenosis. Sometimes they're part of a congenital defect that you're born with. Sometimes the aorta is enlarged with the aortic stenosis. And so choosing between putting in a surgical valve or doing a non-surgical TAVR depends on those factors that I don't know about you, but your cardiologist will. Your cardiologist will know that. And so the other problem, though, is that the heart muscle starts getting thicker. It's pumping against a valve that won't open. The muscle starts to thicken. We call that hypertrophy. And that thickened muscle stops contracting perfectly. It stops especially relaxing perfectly. And the problem with obesity is that fat also infiltrates the muscle of the heart and makes the muscle not function as well. And so you have kind of a double effect on your heart muscle that can make you tolerate the aortic stenosis even less well. So having said all of that, it's a very complicated question. But if your valve is in the severe range and you're having this sweatiness even going across a room, that it's time definitely to consider fixing the valve before we know that once symptoms start, once the valves get severe, that aortic valve disease can be as lethal as cancers, you know? And so in some studies in the old days before surgery was even developed, once people started getting symptoms with severe aortic valves, half of them were dead at 2.5 years. So it's not a benign condition. So I encourage you to talk to your cardiologist, figure out the best ways of possibly repairing this valve or replacing this valve. And don't, you know, take this as seriously as it might be.
Don't delay.
Yeah, don't delay. Follow through.
Cheryl, are you there?
Go over the echo and the... Yes.
Okay. Well, hopefully that has been of help. And we appreciate you calling in. So there you go. All right, let's take another call. Let's go to Bellevue and talk to Don. Hello, Don. Welcome to Leading Edge Medicine. Today, our special guest, Dr. Reuben Maiden.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm in my mid-70s. I would appreciate Dr. Maiden's comments on things I should be thinking about. About a month ago, I had a pretty severe urinary tract infection. Night sweats, that sort of thing, and I developed tachycardia. It took 2 doses of adenosine to resolve it. Then I got a stress test. My heart is sound, good blood flow through the coronary arteries, but during the stress test, I had a brief episode of tachycardia that resolved itself. I'm now on verapamil, and I'd like to know what I should be considering and thinking about, please.
Sure. So it's interesting, you know, when we form embryologically our hearts, different things can happen. And I'm taking a guess here that most likely you were born with a little extra electrical pathway in part of your electrical system, and it makes your heart prone to having this paroxysmal supraventricular tachycardia. It's what they're called. This is the most likely thing. And then it was really the stress of the infection, the body inflammation, which we've talked about, the adrenaline that you were under, and that all these things kind of slicked up the pathway to start conducting electricity, and you'd go into these little tachycardic events. I'm guessing this based on what you've told me, and that there are really a couple options around it. I mean, it may be that you just had these events because of all the inflammation and stress that was in your body, and that you won't have any more. It's hard to know whether you're going to need to stay on verapamil or not. It's just difficult to know. On the other hand, once these get activated, sometimes they just are become persistent, like we've unveiled them, and they kind of start getting a memory of use, and they start happening over and over, and a medication or alternatively a procedure to zap the pathway, it's called a radiofrequency ablation, can be done. I'm saying all this based on the probability this is probably a PSVT. You could have some other form of tachycardia that that I'm not aware of talking to you that might change things. So certainly don't take this as direct medical advice. But these are the conversations to have with your cardiologist. What's the likelihood that I need to stay on this medication? Is it worth a trial to stop it, especially you've been in it and it didn't harm you? If you stop the meds frequently, you'll just go in it and it'll bother you. But have that conversation. Do I have to stay on meds or not? Should we try a trial off of them? And they can kind of give you their insight around that. And then if it really bothers you or just simply don't want to live with meds, a lot of people simply see an electrophysiologist, a special kind of cardiologist that deals in the electrical system, and have a radio frequency ablation and kind of be done with it, especially if it's a lot more bothersome than the few minor events that you've had. In terms of natural therapies, this is interesting. I do a lot of natural therapy for various forms of heart disease. For example, I have great natural therapies for high cholesterol. I have great natural therapies that can avoid meds and hypertension, high blood pressure. But the rhythms, the electrical rhythms, the natural therapies are pretty few, and they don't work very well. You know, we do have a little bit of things that sometimes helps people. Once in a while, magnesium is a benefit. Mm-hmm. Once in a while, high-dose fish oils can be a benefit. Mm. But by and large, the electrical system is not a lot I can do with natural. I get a lot of people who come see me with atrial fibrillation, and they go, I want natural therapies for my AFib. And I go, sorry, that's just the one area where we really don't have it.
Although,
yes,
I do recall a paper a couple of years ago that it was titled, for atrial fibrillation, doctor, put down your prescription pad and get them moving.
Oh, yeah.
because there was a study that basically showed that physical activity, weight loss and physical activity, was as effective as most of our prescription drugs for atrial fibrillation.
Well, you're right. I should have said natural therapies, meaning supplements. Yeah. So, Jerry, you're absolutely right. There's an amazing paper that shows that a 10% weight loss reduces the number of events of atrial fibrillation by 60%.
My goodness.
Can you imagine that? Yeah. You know.
And so, again, obesity is killing America.
Right.
You know, and making us sick. Getting lean, and people are probably tired of hearing me say that word lean, but lean is incredibly important, especially in survival from COVID.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not worried about the first lady. She's young and lean. I am worried about the president. He's old and fat. Two bad things.
Yeah, we've seen some, that's off topic, but we've seen some meta-analysis, statistical analysis on weight and COVID. And it appears in several studies now that the largest risk factor from dying from COVID is being over 85 years old. The second biggest risk factor is being overweight or obese.
Yes.
It's the second biggest risk factor. It's bigger than having heart disease, lung disease, cancer. It's just so interesting because people don't understand the fat cells are not inert.
No.
Yeah. They don't just sit there and do nothing. They make all these inflammatory products.
They make over 80 different pro-inflammatory cytokines that are dumped into your bloodstream.
Right. And that inflammation is a dysfunction of the immune system. Right. And so if you're going to try to fight off a life-threatening infection and your immune system is already not working right, that's a bad place to start.
So this fellow has not told us his weight. But what, as you were talking, I was wondering two things, really. First, why did a man get a serious urinary tract infection?
Good question.
Men don't usually get serious urinary tract infections unless there is an obstruction, you know, prostatic hypertrophy, an abscess, something going on to block that urinary tree. Or they get an infection coming from above, where they've got a systemic infection that comes down through the kidneys. So why did he get an infection in the first place? That needs to be investigated. And secondly, we had not asked him about his weight and physical activity, but that can have, very commonly, a big impact on the instance of his supraventricular tachycardia.
Well, so that will on AFib and A-flutter, but weight is not a factor for the PSVTs.
All right.
Right. It's fortunately, so if you are overweight, probably losing weight won't help your PSVT. But then we don't really have a study on weight and PSVT, so I can't
say. We don't know
for
sure.
Don't know. I can't say with certainty.
Anyway, does that hold?
What?
Go ahead.
One question, if I could, please. You mentioned possibly going off the Verapamil and seeing how it works. Is there a pill or something I can carry along with me if I go off the Verapamil? So if I get a SVT, I can take it?
Yeah, there are options, and I'm absolutely not advising you to stop your Verapamil until you talk to your doctor, because I don't know the details of your PSVT. Sometimes they have dangerous features, something called the bypass tract, or sometimes the rate can degenerate and go extremely high above 220, and these things can be medically serious. And so I'm suggesting that a conversation might be, wow, I've only had a couple of these. They were during a time of systemic stress. Maybe, you know, there's an opportunity, but for sure, talk it over with your doctor.
Thank you, Don. Appreciate that. That opens up a line, but really, no, don't call, because when we come back, we're going to talk to Mark and Charlie and maybe even Tom. We've got Dr. Reuben Maiden, our cardiologist.
And then we'll be at the end of the show.
That's why we can't take any more calls than we already have on hold. So the good news is we have another 2 hours to go. Starting at 10 o'clock, it's another station. If you want to know where we are, because I have asked and he has said yes, Dr. Maiden will stay with us at least for another hour. So go to our website, lmclinic.com. Push the podcast button at the top right of the page, and it will show you where we are for all 4 hours. We do 4 hours of live radio every Saturday morning. Two right here, 8 to 10 on KTTH, and then from 10 to noon on another station. But you'll have to find us at lmclinic.com. Podcast button, top right, and there we are. And by the way, all of our shows are on our website. So all the stuff that Dr. Reuben Maiden is talking about right now, you can go back and listen to it again. Because your Uncle Charlie, your mom, your cousin Joe, the guy at work, he needs to hear it too. We'll be right back.
After I started on Dr. Mixon's program, their energy level just booms, and the mood leveling out was so important. Your quality of life just is transformed. I am so grateful to Longevity and Dr. Mixon's program.
Come on, Jerry. Come on, Samara.
Come on, Samara. Let's dance.
Here we go. Oh, I love it, folks. We should have this on TV.
We should.
Welcome back. This is the final minutes of Leading Edge Medicine. I just need to say this one more time. These are stories that are so important. And if you would like to make one of our free health analysis appointments at Longevity so that you can have a fellow like this, Dr. Mixon. Well, actually, you're not seeing patients
anymore.
Not
seeing patients these days.
Well, don't you see one or two billionaires?
Don't say that.
They like to stay on the
That's right. The main key, though, that I want to point out is people think that this is a practice for wealthy people because we don't take insurance. Nothing could be further from the truth. The average household income of a longevity patient, now admittedly this is 4 or 5 years old, is $70,000. We have bus drivers, construction workers, mailmen, doctors, billionaires, anybody that's smart enough to know they need to be on the leading edge. If you're smart enough to know that you're screwed with traditional orthodox insurance-based medicine alone. You need it, but alone, you're screwed. And that's why Longevity is doing so freaking well, and this is why we're making available these appointments. Go to lmclinic.com, make your appointment. It's free. Two free tests, plus the free supplements if you want, $100 of supplements. And we have at least 15, 16, or 17 appointments in each of our three clinics, Tacoma, Linwood, Kirkland. And they're yours. Just make an appointment. Your first step, if you're not happy with the aging process, you need one. All right. Dr. Reuben Maiden is our guest. You said earlier in this little time together that you introduced angioplasty.
Yes.
And stenting into the Northwest. Tell us a little bit about that and how and why.
Well, so when I was looking for a job at the end of my fellowship, the group here in Kirkland was looking for someone to teach them and bring angioplasty here, which had started. And I had been fortunate for me to cross the path with that. And this is actually a little bit of a funny story. So I was a first-year fellow in the University of Minnesota, and I had heard about this guy who'd come up with this crazy idea of sticking balloons into the arteries of the heart and expanding blockages. His name was Andreas Grunzig, an amazing human being. And he was a physiologist. He wasn't even a cardiologist. Mm. And so he invented this balloon idea, and he started doing it in animals and then humans, and he was building the balloons in his kitchen.
Okay. Yeah.
And so he presented a poster at a meeting, and I saw the poster, and then I got really interested in this idea. And in Minnesota, one of the attendings in my hospital was also interested in it. And a guy in Kansas City named Jeff Hartzler had gone to work with Andreas and had learned the technique and had brought balloons back and started manufacturing them. And he was down in Kansas City. And one day the attending and I thought, there's a conference in Kansas City. We should just go and see what this is about. So we drive down to Kansas City from Minneapolis, take turns all night long. And we get down there. We go to Jeff Hartzler's course. And it's like amazing. Like, really? This is just amazing. So it was a very small audience. I think it was Jeff's first course. And he gave balloons, a sample balloon, to most of the university participants there. And we got a balloon. And we come back to Minnesota. And we're thinking about it, figure out how to use this thing and what to do. And it was within probably a week or two that we had a young guy come in who'd been a construction worker, 39 years old, smoker, had a massive heart attack doing construction. And he comes into the St. Paul Ramsey Hospital, and so we work on this guy. We resuscitate him, CPR, you know, do an angiogram. He's blocked off the main artery of his heart, and everything we do, he stays in shock. He flatlines, he dies. And it's like, oh my God, you know, this was tragic. It was awful. We're all feeling sick over the experience, and we're all pulling off our equipment and taking off our gloves and gowns. And it occurs to me, okay, this is really sad, but you know, maybe we should put the balloon in this guy because we can test it on someone that we can't hurt. Right. And I know nowadays that would probably be illegal, but it wasn't then. So we get our balloon catheter out, our wire, we run it down his artery, we put up the balloon, we take down the balloon, we pull it down. We thought, wow, that actually wasn't that hard. You know, we didn't, like, we got to practice, got to use the balloon. Those were sterilizable back then. We could sterilize it, and we do that, and we go back to the control room, start taking everything off. And this guy has been flatlined for probably 6, 8, 10 minutes. I don't know. He wakes up.
Wow.
No,
he wakes up and he starts thrashing on the table. It's like, you know, like, what's going on? We run out there. We're holding him down. We're tying him down. He's on a ventilator. He's pulling the tube out of his lungs, you know, thrashing around, you know, and we hold him. We get him to calm down. He goes, what happened? What happened? I said, well, you had a heart attack, but you're okay. He goes, oh, okay. So, well, can I go home? I go, no, you can't go home. You know? And so the attending and I go back in the control room and we look at each other and he goes, F bomb. What the F bomb? And I'm looking at him, I'm going, what the F bomb? He goes, what the F bomb? What the F bomb? It's like, what just happened? What just happened? We had never seen anything like that in our lives. And so, you know, it took 16 years before the first study was done that showed angioplasty worked in heart attacks.
But I
knew from day one that it worked.
That's the story. We are going to continue from the story in our next 2 hours. Please, please, please follow us. Go to our website, lmclinic.com. Yes, make an appointment. That should be the first thing you do, but for goodness sakes, make a free health analysis appointment. But follow us, find us, push the podcast button at the top of our page, homepage at lmclinic.com. Find where we are for the next 2 hours, because we're keeping this guy, Dr. Reuben Maiden. Boy, this is fun. Don't you just love doing this?
Dr. Moore's stories are unique.
That's right. We'll be back.
This is Dave Ross. A few years ago, we hired State Roofing to replace some siding on our home. It had to be custom milled to match the original, and they did a beautiful job. And I told myself that if they ever asked me to endorse them, I will. And now, they have. State Roofing is a local business, family-owned for 52 years. They roof rain or shine, and you're just in time for their 000 sale. Zero down, zero interest, zero payments for 12 months. And best of all, their jingle is smack in the middle of my vocal range.
State Roofing, the last roof you'll ever need.